You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The next mayor will be navigating some turbulent times here in San Antonio. We have a federal government and state government that are clearly not interested in trying to support government at the local issue. We have challenges to our economy with tariffs, mass deportation of federal workers being cut, funding cuts that's going to impact our public health system, our education system, a lot of the services that we provide. We're going to need a mayor who can oversee a city and lead a city that is going to be at odds with state lawmakers on politics and policies. So the question is, who is that going to be? We're joined in the studio right now by candidate Melissa Cabello-Javeda. She is the District 6 councilperson, and her name is on the ballot for mayor. And our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Melissa, welcome back to The Source.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So tell us, why are you running for mayor?
I'm running for mayor because I want folks to look back on an eight-year administration for Melissa as mayor as being the mayor that gave city government back to the people of San Antonio. I'm born and raised in this city, and we've seen some turbulent times in my 6 years on council. I have been with the city through COVID, through the Winter Storm Uri, through the Black Lives Matter movement, through so many things, and we've been through it together. I think that the turbulent times that are coming ahead need that experience. We need that experience that shows our community that I'm here with you, that I've been through this with you every step of the way, and I'm going to continue to fight for you. I'm born and raised in this city, and I never left. I feel that strongly about my hometown.
So you are an attorney, a disability rights attorney.
Yes.
Right now we're facing this anti-DEI. Yeah. It's DEIA, mm-hmm. Accessibility.
Yes.
So if you were going to be mayor, mm-hmm. drawing on your expertise as a disability rights attorney, how do you see the efforts in order to protect some of the most vulnerable people that we have in San Antonio, making sure that people have accessibility and opportunity?
So local government is going to be our last line of defense for not just DEIA, but a lot of other issues. We have a state and a federal government now who are not helping us as a community. So your mayor, your city council is your last line of defense. And we have to protect those entities and those organizations and the rules, really, that have been helping us for so long. I was asked at a forum what DEIA means to me, and it means opportunity. I am a Mexican-American woman who grew up in the west side of San Antonio, and my first in my family to graduate from college and have a doctorate. And all of that happened because I was given opportunity. I had to work for everything I've had. It was not handed to me. And I had those opportunities because of inclusion programs. So I want to remind everybody, that people will say that God created us all equally. That's absolutely true. But man-made systems are not created equally. So we need to correct that behavior. It wasn't born of, just nothing. It's a reaction to not being included. So your local government is your last line of defense. And your next mayor is going to be that person that defends you.
In the last half hour, we had a question from a caller, and he wanted to ask to both candidates. And he was asking about the funding for the arts and cultural mm-hmm. support in San Antonio. Here we are with Fiesta. Fiesta is a huge economic boon to mm-hmm. San Antonio. We get a lot of external dollars coming in for tourism, and it also highlights San Antonio's culture. That culture needs support for it to maintain its integrity and also to just to ingenuity, inventiveness, entrepreneurship. That's all there as well.
That's us in a nutshell, right? And you really have to understand our city. You have to have been here to understand that culture. And that's one of the things I want to do is protect our identity and our culture. When we look at all of the different things that are happening now and talk about Fiesta, it's a party with a purpose, right? There's even scholarship money. We're giving kids opportunities with our
Fiesta. So many nonprofits mm-hmm. depend upon Fiesta yep. as a major part of their budget, and particularly as they're seeing cuts.
Yes.
So when you go to a lot of events, the money you're spending for your fun and great, and we're celebrating San Antonio, also mm-hmm. is helping a lot of great nonprofits.
Yeah. And thank you for saying that, because our nonprofits in our city are $6 billion economy, that they add that much. They're employers, they do, and more than anything, they do so much good work in our community. Things that your city can't do, that your state and federal government can't do, they're out there, street level, boots on the ground, doing that real work and helping our communities.
So as mayor, how would you work to maximize the nonprofit sector in San Antonio?
So part of it is the way we budget. We every year we pace our budget on last year's budget and the year before that and the year before that. So I've advocated for zero-based budgeting so we can kind of wipe that slate clean, take today's priorities. And today's priorities, this year's priorities are going to be different than last year's because of the federal funding that we are going to be losing and that nonprofits are losing. So taking all of these organizations that we fund, including arts and culture, because those are just as important as any other, that's who our identity. When we show our arts and culture, that's who we are as San Antonians. We have to protect that. And that means funding those nonprofits, not just the very good work that's being done in mental health circles and substance abuse and all of those things, but our arts and culture. So when we're looking at our budget, we have to reprioritize this year. We have to wipe that slate clean, talk to community first. What are you looking for? How do you want to suspend your budget dollars? I also very much believe in participatory budgeting, and then build our budget based on that. And I think that San Antonio's priorities this year are going to be very different because our nonprofits that are doing that incredible work are getting completely wiped out in some cases.
Let's go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255 for you to ask a question to Melissa Cabello-Javita, the candidate for mayor and city council member. Let's go to Becky. And Becky, you're on the air.
My name is Vicky.
Okay. Well, Vicky, sorry about that. Go ahead.
Okay.
Vicky.
That's okay. I'm a dog advocate in this city. And we've had issues with stray and roaming dogs and pet welfare for a long time. And I have discussed this with you. And I would like to know, it also has been rated number 3 on every budget survey since 2017. And I would like to know what your plans are in addressing this problem that's very evident in this city.
Yeah, it's a public safety issue. Thank you so much, Vicky.
It absolutely is a public safety issue. I thank you for the question, Vicky. I feel very strongly about this issue. We have had not just people killed and mauled, but we've had a lot of attacks that aren't reported. But more than that, we have a huge, especially dogs, but, you know, animal population issue. And I'm thankful that you brought up stray and roaming, Vicky, because people maybe don't understand that it's roaming dogs are actually owned. They're out roaming the street, but somebody owns them. So it really has been a people issue. And I think we correct that by two things. It's education, helping our community to understand why it's important to take care of your animals and keep them in their confined spaces and spay and neuter. And the second is spay and neuter. So one of the things that I like to do is bring back our mobile clinic. We used to have a mobile clinic that would spay, neuter, vaccinate, and chip. And the second thing is we need to do transport. You go to other cities in our country and they don't have this stray and roaming animal problem. As a matter of fact, they're looking for dogs and cats to adopt. Well, they have a supply issue. We have the supply. So transporting the animals to different areas, and there's nonprofits that do that work as well, to be able to take care of the animals in a safe way, but also helping us out with our population that's out of control right now.
All right, another caller, Vanessa. Vanessa, you're on the air.
Hi, Councilwoman. I've been doing my research on all the mayoral candidates, and I just wanted to ask you, as public safety chair, what can you point to during your tenure that you believe significantly helped to lower crime?
I'm really thankful that you asked this because it's two things, Vanessa. I've worked really hard on lighting. Lighting is a real deterrent. You don't necessarily want, we have officers for every corner, but we can put a light on every corner. And so lighting is a real, studies have shown, the National Institutes of Health studies have shown that lighting is a real deterrent. The second is our SA Core team. I'm really proud of this. The mayor allocated millions of dollars of our ARPA dollars, our COVID dollars, to different committees, and I chair our public safety. And $26 million of public safety dollars went to mental health. Every single dollar went to mental health because mental health is also public safety. So with that, we started a pilot called SA Core, where if you're having a mental health crisis or somebody you know is having a mental health crisis and call 911, you can have a mental health, that SA Core team will go to the home and talk with the person that's having the episode. So they're social workers. They're trained in de-escalation, and it's not a gun and a badge at the door, which can be very scary for somebody that's in experiencing a mental health episode. That was a pilot initially from 9 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. I was a little anxious about that because it didn't seem like it would be very effective, but it was. And now we have 3 teams that are around the clock, and that has significantly lowered not just the incidence of calls, of crime calls, but it's lowered the amount of mental health episodes that are being dealt with in a negative way. Not only that, but once you have that care, then they also make sure that you're getting care and you're staying in treatment. So that's a real game changer for us. We've also, of course, worked on the UTSA plan. The first one was hotspot policing, and there's 3 phases. And just recently, we found out that crime has been lowered by 19% overall. Our violent crime.
Tell me more about hotspot policing.
Hotspot policing is where officers will go to an area that's kind of deemed a hotspot, so high crime area, not just violent crime, but also property crime. And they'll go and park and be present, just be physically present, sometimes kind of run their lights and sirens and then kind of move over into another area. I was very skeptical. I did not think that was going to work, but it showed. I mean, the data showed that
it's just
the crime
a cop on the beat doing the job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, what we're really striving for, and one of my plans going forward is to make sure that we're a more proactive police force. They're more reactive now. Just by necessity, they're reacting to calls instead of being proactive and being kind of your neighborhood, your friendly neighborhood police officer. And that's where we want to go to.
All right. Well, we have to take a break here. It's going to be a minute break, but our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255. We're having a conversation with Melissa Cabello-Havada. She is the candidate for mayor. We're wrapping up our mayoral candidate week. She is now the District 6 council member. You can call in with your questions and for her. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. This week we've been talking to the 8 city council, not city council, candidates running for mayor. We call them the 8. These are the top 8 candidates based upon a rubric that we have for their polling, fundraising, and public service in San Antonio offices held. And now we are joined by our ultimate candidate, that we saved the best for last, candidate Melissa Cabello-Havada. And you can ask a question. The number is 833-877-8255. All the other interviews are archived on our website at tpr.org, and you can listen to those. Let's go to Mary on the phone. And Mary, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Ms. Cabello, thank you so much running for mayor. I know that you're involved with the senior citizens. I'm a senior citizen, and we are going through drastic times right now, the senior citizens, where there's a generation gap where we can no longer retire. So we're going to continue working until who knows where. But what do you have any plans for us? We get like education. Do we have the brain for education? The other candidates said about that. School or training, but really, that's all they have? Like, training is for the young people, not for the senior citizens. What's going to happen to us? And I'm sorry for saying this, but we're getting the end of the stick here.
Yeah.
All right, Mary, thank you for your call.
Thank you, Mayor. And I don't disagree with you. Look, our seniors in our city are the backbone of our community. But for your work and your hard work and your advocacy through your lives, I would not be here as a San Antonian. So I thank you for everything you've done for our community. So I have had what I think where we really need to focus is helping our seniors financially. We see so many times now, as you mentioned, that we're all living longer, right, as Americans, and that's a good thing. But when you retire, you may or may not have Social Security, you know, in a few years. But even that is not enough. So I'm my big concern is financial for our elders. And there's a lot of financial and fraud and abuse. And it's making sure that your pocketbook goes that much farther. So looking at just recently, I introduced a policy to lower the price for yard sales and things like that for seniors and for veterans. We've, of course, you can freeze your taxes. And I think that we should lower that age because we need to make sure that that our senior community are just able to afford the things that they can do. And I agree with you. I think we should offer training, absolutely. But we also have to look at things that enhance your lives. Senior Planet has a great program for helping older people to learn computer skills and things like that. But more than anything, I think it's engaging with other people. I have, I passed a policy at the city whereby all our front-facing city workers are now going to be trained to spot elder abuse. So not just police and fire, but our ACS officers, our code officers, they're out in our communities. So seeing that abuse, when a lot of elders won't report it, unfortunately, because their caregivers are loved ones or employees that they, become very close to, and they don't want to report it. And one of those things is financial abuse and scams that we hear all the time. So another thing I want to do is make sure we have an education program going out to our senior centers, our churches, our nutrition centers, to help elder people understand those scams that are out there. But going back to making it less expensive to be a senior in our city and looking at every point of contact that we have as a city, that will lower the cost of being a senior in our city.
Let's go to another caller. We have Kayla. And Kayla, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I work at a local nonprofit, and I work with youth, specifically in school settings. And I was wondering how you potentially plan to help support nonprofits who do work like this. One of the challenges that we're seeing is because we have so many school districts in San Antonio, one of the issues can be getting things like MOUs and just connecting with the school districts and even getting a call back. Yeah. I think this can be especially problematic when we have grants from the city that we're not able to fulfill or have difficulty fulfilling our obligation with the city because we're just not able to connect with the school district. So in what ways could you potentially help with that if you're elected as mayor? Thank you.
So thank you for the question. Education is key to success. I'll tell you that education in my family, I mentioned earlier, I'm the first in my family to graduate college and have a doctorate. That's because of education. In two generations, that happened. It was my family's trajectory out of poverty. The nonprofits, the public school districts are all out there doing that work, and there's very little support. My husband is a high school administrator, public educator, and seeing that every day and the things that not only the students are dealing with, but our teachers are dealing with is very difficult to see. So as a city, we historically don't support our ISDs. And so I come into office 6 years ago and say, okay, how can we do this? And everybody said, nope, Melissa, you don't have anything to do with the school districts. You really can't get involved. So, I didn't take that for an answer. In my district, we have Edgewood and we have Northside. So I sat down with both superintendents who also said, really, the city doesn't do a whole lot for us. I said, okay, I get that. But what can we do? You know what they came up with? We came up with a plan that we can use our allocation of sidewalks and streets and drainage to make sure that the routes to those schools are safe, that the sidewalks are even, that the streets are taken care of, that drainage issues are taken care of. Because if sometimes parents won't send their students to school if it's raining because they don't want them to be in the rain or muddy. So we can take care of that. But more than that, I have a school safety plan specifically to make sure that our teachers and our students are safe. And I also think we should have a city education liaison. We should have somebody whose job in the city it is to interact with our public school districts, our nonprofits, all of the schools that are out there doing that work so that we can coordinate. I know there was a time when we talked about consolidating all of the ISDs, but there's a lot of pride in the different school districts. So I don't think that's feasible. But what we can do is centralize that at the city and talk with every nonprofit, communication is absolutely key to leadership. If I'm not listening to my community, I'm not leading you. So talking to all the superintendents, talking to the teachers unions, talking to the nonprofits, and bringing everybody to the table together, and more than anything, listening about what we can do. We were successful. I successfully did that in my district, and I can successfully do that throughout the city.
About construction delays that we've seen here, residents have expressed frustration with construction projects running behind schedule, disrupting daily life, disrupting businesses. How do we fix that?
So I a couple of years ago, I started a program, pushed this policy through at the city level called the Responsible Bidder Ordinance. What was happening over and over in the city is if you're a contractor and you bid the low bid in a low bid process, you win no matter what. You don't have to have experience. You don't have to have worked the city with the city before. You just won the low bid. So what was happening is we were having these bad actor contractors come from a lot of times out of the city, bid low, and then come in and do shoddy work, do change orders that raise the price, not be responsive to the community or the city. And now we're seeing these delays a lot of times. So what if you and I had to do work in our homes or our businesses and had bad work done, we wouldn't rehire those. But we were rehiring them in the city over and over. So the Responsible Bidder Ordinance puts these bad actors on what I call the naughty list, right? So now you're on the naughty list, you've done this bad work, or you weren't responsive to community, or you took too long, and for 3 years, you don't get to rebid with the city. And after those 3 years, you have to show the city how you cured that defect, how you're going to be better. So that's kind of a pipeline issue over time that's going to eliminate these bad actors. But more than anything, it's being proactive and not making promises that we can't keep. Look at South Alamo, right? We made this promise that we were going to be done by Final Four. We paved over it to get through Final Four. We're going to go dig it up again. I asked, how did we not know? It was Saw's infrastructure that was underneath the ground. How did we not know it was there? There's technology that finds like dinosaur fossils down there. Why can't we figure out our saw structures down there? So it's, you know, bringing in technology and making sure that our timelines are realistic and being true to our word when it comes to the community. And also, again, going back to that responsible bidder ordinance and holding the contractors accountable for the work that they're doing and not hiring them over and over when they're doing this bad work.
Now the caller, let's go to Travis. And Travis, you're on the air.
Hi, David. Thank you for taking my call. Melissa, thank you for taking the time today. And
absolutely,
thanks for having all the candidates this week. It's been a great time listening. With respect to downtown, the ITC, the Institute of Texan Culture, as a lifelong San Antonian, my favorite event as a kid growing up was the Folklife Festival there, where they had song, dance, music, all of these great cultures that represent San Antonio, that represent Texas. And as a kid, to go there and see the flags and the different costumes and the different musics and the different foods, what a great time to be alive, and only in San Antonio.
Yes.
And it breaks my heart to see the haste and the speed with which they're renovating or tearing down, whatever the word is that they want to use to describe it. But it is going to come down, it appears. Mm-hmm. One way or another. And with it, it's going to be culture. And I'm looking at Melissa's website and her policies, and I see that she has a program, a bullet point about the city music office. And I'm reading it, and I love everything that I'm reading, and I'd like to turn it over to her to discuss
okay.
that.
We're running out of time, Travis, so we're going to okay. talk about the city music plan. Thank you so much, Travis. So I
want to just mention the ITC too. I one of my favorite things as a kid was the Folklife Festival, but also the planetarium. Remember that going on school field trips. So I have a lot of love for that area as well. My city music office. It's we talk about arts and culture, and we especially at the city, and we talk about how much it is San Antonio. But if you don't fund the things that you think are important, then they're not important to you. You got to put your money where your mouth is. So I have introduced a policy on my platform to have a city music office, and I'm a little surprised at how much traction that's gotten. But it's to be able to support not just our symphonies and our Philharmonic, but all of the independent music artists that are out there doing good work for our community. And really making us who we are. So I have a plan to make sure that they're funded and they're taken care of because they're important to our communities.
Melissa Cabello Javera is running for mayor. She is one of 27 candidates, and she is one of 8 who was on Texas Public Radio this week on The Source. We heard about her campaign and her vision for the city of San Antonio. And early voting begins on Tuesday. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me. Enjoyed it.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.